From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present more of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank is talking with J. Warner Wallace, author of the new book, Person of Interest: Why Jesus Still Matters in a World That Rejects the Bible. Let's now join Hank Hanegraaff and J. Warner Wallace in their conversation.
If you just used Google and you said, okay, so who are the top three artists in this genre? Now search the catalogs for those three artists that are the top of that historical genre of art. And you're going to find that every single one of them have painted, etched, sculpted, or drawn Jesus. Doesn't mean they're all Christians, because they're not. But you will see that Jesus occupies headspace in artists throughout history in a way that no other historical figure has ever occupied, and also no other deity. And part of the reason I think for that, Hank, is that Christianity, historically, people groups have modified their image of what Jesus looked like and their image of who Jesus is to contextualize it into their culture. So if you were to look at somebody in Asia who is a Christ follower, who's doing art at some point in history, Jesus will look like the people group that he's being drawn in or painted in. This is true also in Africa. Wherever you are, artists are reinterpreting Jesus. You will not see this for Buddha. So if you look at the artwork of Buddha, you have a hard time pinning down what country it comes from because it all looks so similar. But if you look at the art of Jesus, you'll see that the style, the ethnicity, the cultural references, they are all very specific to the culture in which he's. And because he is malleable in that way, artistically, he ends up inspiring a much larger group globally than he would otherwise. And so that's part of why I think Jesus became such an inspiration for so many artists. And I have one illustration in the book that shows you a kind of an A to Z. This is not just limited to the West. This is a global phenomenon.
And another very interesting point in the book is where you show that Jesus is, in fact, a person of interest, that the greatest popular musical artists of all time have recorded music about Jesus. And that includes, I mean, I'm looking at the list, it's sitting in front of me, John Lennon, Everly Brothers, Simon Garfunkel, Roy Orbison, Muddy Waters, Hank Williams, Frank Sinatra. So here you have the greatest popular artist. I mean, we're not just talking about hymnology. We're talking about popular cultural artists. They've recorded a song about Jesus.
Well, think about it for a second. Look, the rich history and tradition of music in the Judeo-Christian worldview starts in synagogues and starts in ancient Judaism and then moves through the hymns that were being sung, so that every meeting in which Christians come together does involve some form of corporate singing. And then at some point, you're singing with people or leading people in song. And now we have this rich tradition. Like, what worldviews can you think of in which someone's going to get up on a stage every week and sing in front of an audience? Okay, that's Christendom. And because of that structure, some of the greatest singers of all time have come out of the church. Now, are they inspiring other cultures? Yes, they are. Because even if you said, well, yeah, but other cultures have, you know, pop singers that, yeah, they do. And largely, they are looking for inspiration to the people who did it first, which is the West, where it's coming out of a Judeo-Christian worldview about music. And it turns out all of the innovative things that brought music into the 21st century are part of that Christian history of music. You know, melody was just passed down verbally. I mean, you didn't have a way to write down melody. When Jesus was on the planet, you would hum a song the way it's supposed to go. And that's because they knew the melody of the song. That was passed as part of the oral tradition. It was not until a Christ follower created musical notation that we were able to write down and start to really advance the cause, even like harmonies. These are things that are included in the in whatever genre of music you're listening to. It possesses the attributes that directly come out of the history of music as advanced by Christ followers. And so it turns out that wherever you're standing today and whatever you're listening to today, that if you're listening to major and minor scales and harmonies that are being done with multiple instruments, most of them were created by Christ followers, in public, that's publicly accessible, not just to royalty or to the church, well, these are things that are part of a long history of music that is shaped and advanced by Christ followers as part of a larger Judeo-Christian musical worldview. Because let's face it, I mean, we think that even, what does it say in the Gospels? At the Last Supper, Jesus sings a hymn before they leave. So you have this rich tradition of music. And by the way, you could reconstruct the entire story of Jesus just from the hymns in the first 300 years. Those hymns are still out there. Some religious denominations still sing them, and they are rich, not just in terms of rebuilding the gospel elements, you know, where you can retrace the narrative elements of the Gospels, but in reiterating the theological principles, the creeds. They are very rich that way as well. So you can really get a sense of who Jesus was. And I have a list, and we had to push it off to a PDF file because our case notes ended up being twice as long as the book. So we've pushed them off to a PDF file. But if you look at the PDF, you'll see every single hymn we used and what data can be mined from those hymns and reconstructed about Jesus.
I love the fact that you keep using that moniker, Christ followers or Jesus followers. You point out in the book that Jesus Christ is a person of interest in that his followers led the modern education revolution, that his followers celebrated the life of the mind. You talk about the invention of the alphabet and how Jesus' followers are largely responsible for advancing literacy around the globe. So the whole education movement and revolution that revolutionized the world traced back to Jesus as a point of interest.
Absolutely. I limited myself in the fallout to just those aspects of culture from which you could, like, you know, in all of our cold cases, we're simply trying to look in places that they didn't look before. Because it maybe didn't happen yet. Maybe it took another 20 years for this thing to happen, so now I can look at it. But often it's just something that maybe they didn't think of 30 years ago that now I'm saying, well, did they ever look over here? No, let's look over there and see what we find. Well, that's what I'm trying to do here. I'm trying to look in the places that most of us don't look for evidence to reconstruct the story of Jesus. And I'm looking not only, did he have a huge impact at this thing? Yes. And from that thing, can I reconstruct the story of Jesus? Yes. Okay, then I included it. So one of the reasons why I included education is that I knew that there were other ancient educational institutions. But most of people who are not Christian, for example, would say that, you know, modern education, we see it through the lens of the modern university. And if you're talking about modern universities as student bodies that are trained by a faculty that is assembled for the purpose of training them and advancing them year by year and eventually awarding them with a diploma when they complete all of the requirements, well, that notion of a modern university comes out of both the monastery systems of Christianity early, then the cathedral schools, and then the first three modern universities that actually did that at Bologna, Paris, and Oxford. Those are founded by Christians. And if you look today at the top 15 universities in the world, I'll let you pick the metric because there's a lot of different agencies that rank the universities. Don't care. I looked at the top 10. It ends up being 15 on three different lists I can put together. They're all founded by Christians. And if you went back and visited those buildings, those campuses, and you opened up their charters to see what they were founded on, what was their basic mission statement, you will find that you can reconstruct the story of Jesus in its entire. As a matter of fact, just from the buildings, you're going to find verses of Scripture. You're also going to find images, because a lot of the first buildings in these ancient universities were chapels, and that's where they were teaching physics and teaching natural sciences, these called natural philosophy back then. So the point is, they were teaching courses in these buildings surrounded by Jesus images, and they're still there. You can reconstruct episode by episode of the Gospels just from the buildings of the top 15 university campuses in the world today. That's the kind of impact that Jesus had on education. Not just that, but all the lower education stuff that we think is so about kindergarten. Well, who started that? That was a Jesus follower. You know, grade is levels, or you advance from one grade to the next. Who started that? That was a Christ follower. You know, so much of what you think in terms of elementary and secondary school before you even get to university comes out of a rich teaching tradition of people of the book. Who, remember, Jesus didn't say, hey, just go out and make, you know, convert people. He said, make disciples. And making disciples means I got to teach you something to disciple you. You got to know how to read. You got to have an alphabet if you're going to be able to read this book. And it turns out that rich tradition of educating people for the purpose of discipling ended up being the foundation of modern education.
You have an interesting notation in the book where you say that parents have more impact on young Christians than professors do. And oftentimes we look at it in the inverse way, where we say that the modern university is polluting the minds of children. So children come out of churches and they come out of Christian schools, they go to the university, and they quickly lose their faith. But you're talking about the significance of the role of the parent and that being even greater than the role of the professor. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, that's just a sidebar I included because so many of us, you know, I work with high schoolers, and probably my largest audience are high schoolers, and so that's the group I'm really concerned as a youth pastor I was most interested in. But if you look at the polls, yes, it's true. By the time you may say, my kids were Christians when they left here, and then you poll them as they're sophomores or juniors in college and they're no longer following Jesus. But if you ask those sophomores in college, when did you first decide this wasn't true? They will tell you between the ages of 10 and 17.
Stay right here. We'll be back soon to rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with J. Warner Wallace. How does a detective make a case when there's no physical evidence present? Well, cold case detective J. Warner Wallace explains that you look at the events leading up to the crime and then trace the fallout from the event. What we know about Jesus from the events leading up to and following his life on earth tells us significantly more about him than most realize. In his new book, Person of Interest, Wallace makes a convincing case why Jesus still matters today. To receive your copy of Person of Interest, Why Jesus Still Matters in a World That Rejects the Bible, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or just visit us at equip.org. That's equip.org. Breaking the code of the Book of Revelation has become an international obsession. The result has been rampant misreading of Scripture, bad theology, and even bad politics and foreign policy. In the Apocalypse Code, find out what the Bible really says about the end times and why it matters today. Hank Hanegraaff argues that the key to understanding the last book of the Bible is the other 65 books of the Bible, not current events or recent history. The Apocalypse Code offers sane answers to some very controversial questions, such as, what does it mean to take the book of Revelation literally? Who are the Antichrist and the Great Whore of Babylon? And what is the real meaning of 666? Order The Apocalypse Code by Hank Hanegraaff today. Available in softcover, MP3 CD, or MP3 download from equip.org. Or call 888-7000-CRI. The number of wolves surrounding the Christian flock is growing, and they relish nothing more than docile sheep utterly incapable of defending themselves. From militant secularists at home to militant Islamists abroad, the assaults on biblical Christianity are growing dangerously. But Christian Research Institute support team members aren't in favor of feeding these wolves. Instead, each day they're making possible an array of outreaches that defang these wolf packs with solid arguments and evidence that have stood the test of time. What's more, support team members are equipping themselves with CRI's Equipping Essentials, a hand-picked collection of the best apologetics tools around. Your selection of resources, along with a complimentary subscription to the Christian Research Journal, are just our way of saying thanks. To learn more about the benefits of membership, simply visit equip.org. Once again, that's equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. In his new book, Person of Interest, cold case detective J. Warner Wallace demonstrates the reality and relevance of Jesus to a skeptical post-Christian world. Wallace shows that from credible external witnesses, it is possible to piece together highlights of the life and passion of Christ wholly apart from the New Testament. Indeed, says Hank Hanegraaff, Person of Interest is a masterpiece of intrigue, identifying Jesus as the quintessential person of history. To receive your copy of J. Warner Wallace's new book, Person of Interest, Why Jesus Still Matters in a World That Rejects the Bible, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit us at equip.org. That's equip.org. Let's now rejoin Hank Hanegraaff and J. Warner Wallace as they continue their conversation.
You may say, my kids were Christians when they left here, and then you pull them as they're sophomores or juniors in college, and they're no longer following Jesus. But if you ask those sophomores in college, when did you first decide this wasn't true? They will tell you between the ages of 10 and 17. That data is out there, and I recorded it on our website at coldcasechristianity.com because I want people to see that, yeah, I agree. The universities are more than happy to embrace your non-believing kids into a secular worldview, but don't think for a second that they necessarily got there with strong convictions about Jesus. Most of them have just not expressed to you their lack of conviction about Jesus, and they'll still go to church. They'll still be involved in youth group, but they're already checked out. They don't think it's true. And then they end up in a place where you've got a lot of other people who are like, yeah, join us, because we don't think it's true either. And that's really what you're seeing in the data. And why is that? Because, let's face it, 85% of Christians, maybe in my generation or my dad's generation, became Christians by the time they were 18. Now it's dropped down. There's good research on this that kind of shows it's probably in the 12, 13 range. And why is that? Because you're no longer meeting skepticism for the first time at university. You're meeting skepticism for the first time in your playlist on whatever you're watching on your phone. And, you know, if you Google Jesus, what do you think you're going to get in the first page of responses? Is Christianity true? If you Google that in the first page of responses, what are you going to get? You're going to be dominated by anti-Christian literature, anti-Christian videos. There's nothing else. Even if it was like, oh, no, only 10% are going to be hostile to the Christian worldview. Well, if you're just scrolling down through Google responses, you're going to find that you're going to encounter skepticism. And a lot of people didn't encounter that until they got away from home or away from their church. Now, students walk in with that skepticism. They've already heard all the claims of Bart Ehrman. They've already heard all the claims of all the skeptics. They've already been impacted. They've already seen the movies, you know, and they've all, and not only that, they've been entrenched in a worldview that embraces a non-Christian ethos. So it's like, yeah, I couldn't even hold to a Christian view and enjoy the movies I watch on Netflix. You know, so a lot of this is happening earlier than we ever thought before. And what it means is that if it is happening between 10 and 17, well, those are the years when they're still with us. And it's about, are we paying attention? Are we doing what you talked about at the beginning of this podcast? Are you taking this seriously and realizing we are called to do more than just expose kids to the what's? We have to provide whys for the what's. And so I want to teach my kids what's true, but I want to provide two whys. The first why is, well, why do I think that's true? Why do I think Jesus is who he said he was? Well, I've written two books on this, and I'll tell you that this is why. If you ask me, why do you think Jesus is really existed and is God incarnate? Well, I've written about this in this book. Now, the second why is the one that I also try to write about in this book, and that is, okay, so you told me what is true about Jesus, and you told me why you think it's true. Why should I care? Why should that matter? Okay, great, you're geeked out on it. As an old guy, why should I be geeked out on it at 18? Why should I care? Well, that's because everything that you think matters in life that I thought mattered as an atheist, everything. And for me, the stuff that mattered was, you know, literature and music and art and education and science. Those things matter to most of us. turns out that you wouldn't be where we are today in 2021 if not for the worldview initiated by Jesus, because it turns out all five of those things stand on the shoulders of Jesus and his followers. So he should matter to you, because it turns out everything that you think does matter to you traces back to Jesus.
What is really interesting about what you just said is that we hear over and over again, follow the science. And one of the prevailing myths in our culture is that Christians are science stoppers, that Christianity is anti-science. There's a quote in your book that caught my attention from Catherine Ferringer. She's a social activist. She's an officer at the Freedom From Religion Foundation, who said that we would be 1,500 years ahead if it hadn't been for the church dragging science back by its coattails and burning our best minds at the stake. Now, that is an outrageous statement, but it has a lot of cachet in our culture. There are a lot of people thinking today that Christianity is a science stopper.
Yeah, you'd have to be so ignorant of history to be able to look at that statement and go, oh, wow, you know, because you'd have to believe that somehow Christianity burned the best minds, when in fact the history of science demonstrates that the best minds were always Jesus followers to begin with. So if I looked through the history of science, you can kind of just start to Google it. How about this? There's lots of books, and I've got them all sitting here on my shelf, but I get it. If you're 15 right now and you're listening to this, or your parents are listening to this, you're probably going to want a source you get to on your phone right now. You're fine. Search on your phone right now for the top scientists or scientific developments of the 5th century BC, or start, you know, 10 centuries in the past BC, and then work your way up through each century. What you're going to discover is that science, as we know it today, explodes after the appearance of Jesus. And what's interesting is it doesn't have to be that way. Jesus could have appeared, you know, somewhere else in the timeline, but I actually have a chart that I can show you. And here's how I got it. I simply said, who are the leading scientists and leading scientific developments in each century? And I charted them. And you'll see bumps in those charts where things take off a little bit, take off here, take off there. And I've tried to figure out, well, why is it taking off there? Of course, for example, you'll see science takes off pretty strongly after universities are in place. The scientific revolution takes place, you know, that's kind of after the printing press, it's after the Protestant Reformation. There's a lot of things that happen that kind of open up different avenues to different countries in Europe. And you might say, well, look, yeah, okay, so did you realize that like 99% of scientists credited with founding the modern sciences during the scientific revolution now, right, of the 16th and 17th century, they're Christians, they're Christ followers. And they are all in Europe. And you think, well, yeah, but everyone in Europe was a Christ follower. Well, yeah, but here's the point. There were more people outside of Europe than there were in Europe. There were bigger people groups in Asia, bigger people groups in Persia, bigger people groups all over the map. Why is it taking off in that relatively small geographic location under Christendom? Because there's something about the worldview inaugurated by Jesus that acts as an igniter for the sciences. And that's why if you make a list, and we did this in the book, and this took forever, by the way, about 950 scientists of notable, I call these tip of the iceberg scientists. So these are the ones that somehow made their way into the history books. They're all Christ followers. And I've made a list of all of the Christ-following scientists that were founders and innovators and inaugurators of their personal scientific discipline, like chemistry or astronomy or biology or whatever it may be, quantum mechanics, whatever it may be, all through history. Well, it turns out these are Christ followers. They are the fathers of the scientific disciplines. They've won more Nobel Prizes in the sciences than any other group. They have been just as strong post-Darwin as they were pre-Darwin. I've got illustrations of that, you can see it. And I've got all the lists in the PDF file and all the denominations, where they come from, you know, where you find them. That took forever to assemble. But the point is, I wanted people to see that the science fathers are dominated by Christ followers. And this is, by the way, Muslims had a huge impact on the sciences. And if you trace the impact that Muslims had on the sciences, you will follow it right up to about the 10th or 11th or 12th century, and then it stops. And it stops largely, and then people have written about this. There's a book called The Closing of the Muslim Mind, where it just talks about what it was largely a theological conviction about the Quran that stopped the impact that Muslims were having in the sciences. Yet there's something about the worldview that was initiated by Jesus that ignited activity in the sciences, and it never slowed down. And so if you look at the list of all of the innovators that we have in the book, I think you'll be pretty blown away by what, and I think that young people need to know that, because there's a sense in which we are perceived as anti-science when most of what we are benefiting from right now, from scientific discoveries, is because of Christ followers. We have to make an intentional decision not to surrender our historic position of leadership here, because it would not be a Christian worldview mandate. As a matter of fact, the Christian worldview encourages us to explore the natural world around us, because we get to write into that book of nature truths about God that are absolutely in agreement with the special revelation of Scripture, but are seen in the natural world. I mean, we get to explore. Think about, you might be interested in physics and you just are geeked out in physics, good for you. But if you think that your exploration of physics is a way for you to worship the God of the universe, you are at a whole different level of commitment. And that's what we see in the sciences.
We'll have to stop here for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Join us again next time when we'll continue Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with J. Warner Wallace. Our firm commitment here at the Christian Research Institute is to defend the faith once for all delivered to the saints and to equip believers to become true disciples of Jesus Christ. In appreciation for your crucial gift to help strengthen and expand CRI's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches, Hank would like to send you J. Warner Wallace's new book, Person of Interest: Why Jesus Still Matters in a World That Rejects the Bible. Call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or visit our website, equip.org. Once again, that's equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more. Breaking the code of the Book of Revelation has become an international obsession. The result has been rampant misreading of Scripture, bad theology, and even bad politics and foreign policy. In the Apocalypse Code, find out what the Bible really says about the end times and why it matters today. Hank Hanegraaff argues that the key to understanding the last book of the Bible is the other 65 books of the Bible, not current events or recent history. The Apocalypse Code offers sane answers to some very controversial questions, such as, what does it mean to take the book of Revelation literally? Who are the Antichrist and the Great Whore of Babylon? And what is the real meaning of 666? Order the Apocalypse Code by Hank Hanegraaff today. Available in softcover, MP3 CD, or MP3 download from equip.org. Or call 888-7000-CRI.